to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today, my guest is Jane Rosenthal, founder and CEO of Tribeca Enterprises. Rosenthal and Tribeca have an interesting perch in the entertainment industry, with activity in live events, movie and TV production, as well as a growing gaming division. Rosenthal, in our conversation, explains how the Tribeca team has moved mountains, and then some, in New York City to stage the 20th anniversary festival with live audiences just as pandemic shutdowns are easing. The industry veteran also gives her observations on the spate of media M&A and the fate of moviegoing after a year of epic disruptions. And she discusses the shakeup closer to home with the shift that Tribeca made in moving from James Dolan and MSG to James Murdoch and his Lupa Systems as Tribeca's primary investor. It's all coming up on Strictly Business after this break. Welcome back to Strictly Business. Jane Rosenthal, co-founder and CEO of Tribeca Enterprises, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Cynthia. It's great to see you and hear you, and look forward to talking.
Jane, you have been at the head of Tribeca Enterprises for many years. You've been partners with Robert De Niro in film production, in the Tribeca Festival, which is going on 20 years now, in other ventures. How do you feel about the media landscape at this moment with so much M&A? Big companies are getting bigger. Studios are being sold. Is this a tough time to be an independent in the content business?
It's been a very exciting time because there's so many different opportunities and different places to sell products and to have your IP bought. And it's also exciting because you're no longer just selling to a handful of networks that are saying they only want a legal drama or a police drama, and it's got to be broken down into XYZ. So as a creative producer, it's very exciting time because you can do I can do a docu series like we just did with This Is a Robbery for Netflix. You can do something like The Irishman that took us 12 years to get made. And between technology catching up and Netflix, which really took a shot on it, we could get that made. I could make something like When They See Us, which originally we had started that as a movie. And we realized that the story held more. The story was a larger story. So then it became a four-parter on Netflix. So it lets you tell the kind of story that you need to tell in the time that you need to tell. So I think it's a very exciting time, and really looking forward to see what David Zaslav's going to be able to do. And to see what, I haven't read all the news on the Amazon MGM deal, but looking forward to seeing how that's going to shake out and be better for the business. I think all this activity is ultimately good for the business. Look, what also happens is it gets big, then they break it up. And then, I mean, we've seen this cycle go round and, round and round over the years. But I think any change, I think change is good, and it's exciting, and especially when you admire the people that are part of that change. So I think it's exciting.
Tribeca Enterprises has had a share of change in the last couple of years. In 2019, you did a transaction with Lupa Systems, the investment company run by James Murdoch, and brought in some other partners. Can you talk about what motivated that deal and what you have, what you've been able to do now that you have brought in those investment partners?
So our Our previous investor was MSG, James Dolan, who still is a wonderful partner. The way that opened Radio City. Our closing night's going to be there, Jim. You know, we continue to do stuff with MSG. The way for us to fit in, for Tribeca to fit into MSG, didn't quite work the way we both wanted it. And James, we started talking to James, and he's been an extraordinary partner. His whole group at Lupus Systems has been terrific. It's allowing us to build different verticals of our company that we wanted to do for a long time. So I've been trying to really push gaming for almost 10 years. So we were the first festival 10 years ago to ever screen a game. We screened LA Noire, Rockstar Games, which is in New York. We brought League of Legends to Madison Square Garden 6 years ago already. That was the first time a big esport event was in New York. There had been smaller events with Street Fighter and, but nothing as large as League of Legends. I'm always interested in how technology and storytelling come together, and also how you can, your audiences have different choices. So with James, I'm able to push in to do more in gaming. That's, that's one vertical. We're also looking at how we'll grow our Tribeca Studios, which is our branded content business. We're looking at other ways to keep growing our business beyond just the festival. You can put on a festival in the middle of New York City for 10 days. Previously there was a lot more activity going on in the city, and I look forward to that more activity happening as we come out of this COVID isolation, which is happening. But you have to be sustainable beyond those 10 days. So it is. It's exciting to have a partner who wants to work with you and really grow it. So we'll have more announcements for you, Cynthia. You got right in the middle here, but we'll have some other announcements for you that I'll come back to you on.
You mentioned that the movie going experience, which has been, just so obviously, under extraordinary pressure in the last year. And now that people are coming out, now that, again, people are sort of coming out of our hibernation, do you have a feeling, even just from preparing the festival, do you have a sense that there is that pent up demand, that people are really excited to go back to theaters? Or do you think that we might see a more fundamental shift in behavior after this, long period of lockdown?
With the festival right now, as we were planning this, smack in the midst of, the height of COVID, we took a gamble that come June, people, we would have more people vaccinated. The weather was different. The whole awards calendar, festival calendar had shifted, and we were cautious about whether or not we booked theaters because we didn't, one, think people would want to come indoors 100%, and also we knew the capacity wasn't going to be at 100%. So we created these amazing, outdoor screenings from the Battery, Brooklyn, Staten Island, the Bronx, we're all over the place. We're taking what the festival has done, from its inception after 9/11, when we started the film festival, to bring people back downtown to really help stimulate the local businesses, local restaurants. So hope we can do a little of that too, as we go into all these other communities in New York. And what's a better way to start to bring people out than to watch a movie. We're opening with In the Heights, and we'll be at the United Palace Theater in the Heights. And then
kind of fits the theme.
And then we will simultaneously screen In the Heights to all of those theater locations that I mentioned.
Oh, that'll be fun. That will really kind of have that spirit of event. Well, for a festival born out of tragedy and strife and difficulty, I'm guessing that tackling creating multiplexes in multiple locations was probably new for you, but still not given the origins of the fest, probably not the toughest thing that you've ever tackled with Tribeca.
No, I think the first festival was this is very difficult too, because it's emotionally people coming out and people being a bit afraid, and you know, just the emotional toll that COVID has taken on everybody. Although that first festival, I think I had a bit of PTSD and was obsessed with how many people we could bring back downtown. The first time I've gone into the Regal Theater downtown, which was right across from the Trade Center site, I was in a hazmat suit. And, you know, that was all the destruction, the physical destruction of the city, of these massive buildings, and the loss of life was palpable at that time. You know, it's just about bringing back to life what we all love to do. And, you know, certainly here in New York and in LA, you know, how much the entertainment business means to us, both from a business standpoint, but also from a mental health standpoint. And certainly in New York, the business of entertainment and how it relates to tourism and, you know, what it brings to the city and what's been lost in those 18 months. I think it was 2 days ago, I suddenly saw a commercial for the Broadway show Moulin Rouge. I got so excited. You realize, oh, I haven't seen commercials like this in so long. You know, it was, you know, we're coming back.
Yeah. There's nothing was sadder than being in the theater district with all the lights dimmed and all the marquees looking forlorn. Has the Tribeca Festival as a business, I know, festivals take a while to find their sea legs financially, but has Tribeca the festival, has it grown into a profitable business for Tribeca Enterprises?
Not 100% yet. We're getting there. Without question, getting there. Look, I'm in the most expensive city.
Right.
Most expensive city. When somebody says to me, who's your biggest competition as a festival? I'm like, my biggest competition is New York City itself. Is right. Hamilton? Is the Knicks in a playoff game? Finally, and the Nets in a playoff game. I mean, where could that happen? We deserve it here in New York, but it's costly to be in New York and to do this. We're getting there, particularly with the other verticals that we have been working on for a number of years.
And I would imagine the city is very supportive. I mean, I'm guessing, you know, again, the festival was born out of trying to help the downtown area. But would you say that they, you know, given that the city and the mayor has had a lot going on in the last 18 months, were they helpful? I would imagine that they were very encouraging in having you get Tribeca back on its feet again this year.
Anda Castillo, who's the commissioner from MOM, Mayor's Office of Entertainment,
Media and Entertainment, yeah. And also a Strictly Business podcast guest. I have interviewed her. She's terrific.
She's been extraordinary, and the parks department has been very helpful. But they're not giving you, they're helping us by, you know, alleviating some costs, but not, you know, nothing substantial. I mean, one of the things in this country is that you don't have the you don't have this support for the arts. So it does become either, you know, private funding or through other types of partnerships.
Don't go anywhere. We'll take a short break and be back with more from Tribeca's Jane Rosenthal. And we're back with more from Tribeca's Jane Rosenthal.
Let me go back a little bit more about Tribeca Enterprises outside of the festival. And you mentioned with Lupa Systems and the other a new set of investors coming in that you've opened into. You feel like there's openings in other areas. Where do you see the biggest growth opportunities for a company like Tribeca Enterprises that is involved in different forms of content, live events? Do you see it as more in the event experience spaces, branded content, or, you know, film and TV content?
I certainly see for Tribeca Enterprises where we can take some of our events and grow them beyond just the festival and, you know, go to other, other cities globally. I, you know, also see what we can do in our branded content space as growing. So this year we have, I guess this is our 7th or 8th year of doing Tribeca X, which is really for CMOs who are telling their stories in different ways, really through social good and diverse storytellers. So we have a wonderful guest list of Doug McMillan, Lorraine Tuhill from Google. So that will be an interesting business conversation to have, and
especially right now, given where people are kind of at that crossroads of just launching back into something like normal marketing plans and spending.
And how did they spend their money during this time, or where were they going to put their dollars? I mean, we have gone through. Certainly as a country, between COVID and the George Floyd and what has been exposed as, what COVID has exposed for the inequities in this country. And on one hand, while that's been extremely painful, it's an opportunity to change a lot of our infrastructure, whether that becomes broadband for all, looking at how, how different business models have to change, how movie theaters, a lot of that was teetering on the brink prior to COVID, and it kind of pushed it
right.
Now what's going to emerge? And I do think there'll be a healthier, more interesting business that will emerge.
Do you feel like, are you as going forward as strongly as you would have, say, in 2019 before the pandemic craziness? Are you going forward with a feature film slate as ambitious as you might have before the pandemic? Or has that curbed your enthusiasm at all?
Tribeca Enterprises doesn't have a feature film slate. That's really what we, Bob and I, do on Tribeca Productions in terms of what we develop. And, you know, we're a small company on that side. So from that point of view, we came out of a very heavy production year in 18-19, and we're kind of back in that development things. In terms of Tribeca Enterprises, it's been fascinating to see the films that have been coming out of it. I think we have our strongest competition year, also trying to push a new platform called Tribeca at Home, which if you can't come to Tribeca or you only want to go to one or two screenings, you can watch Tribeca at Home, and it's not just a repeat of the movies, but there are special featurettes and special, you know, shorts very specifically for that that platform.
You mentioned earlier The Irishman and the project that took 12 years. You know, one of the famously long gestating film projects that that sometimes happen. How do you feel now that you're about 2 years out from its release? How do you feel about how it performed and having it be not exclusively, but such a, you know, it was a Netflix movie for all intents and purposes, although it did have some theatrical distribution. How did you feel about it in the final analysis?
As the movie itself and working with Scorsese, De Niro, Pesci, Pacino, I mean, Keitel, I mean, that was, that's kind of a dream come true, especially if you went to NYU. So that, you know, I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of that movie. And, you know, I feel so fortunate to have worked with all of them together in that capacity. In terms of where you may be trying to ask the question about Netflix and distribution, at the time, Netflix had, I could probably get you, I mean, there were over 1,200 independent theaters domestically that had booked Irishman. And Netflix was Ted Sarandos, Scott Stuber were, you know, so committed to showing this theatrically. They had taken over the Belasco Theater here in New York and turned that into a movie theater. So, and it was playing, you know, in other parts of New York, and again in independent theaters throughout the country, also in independent theaters throughout the world. So I was very pleased at that. You know, you were still having that fight at the time of what the window was going to be.
Right.
You know, Netflix only wanted 6 weeks, but the theaters wanted 3 months. I would say today the theaters would have taken the 6 weeks.
Right.
So, you know, time has a way of changing people's mind, but God knows nobody wanted to go through a pandemic to have to, you know, a global pandemic to have to change business models. But things happen in strange ways.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.